You're listening to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Welcome to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. Dr. Charles Laux coming here, and I have a special guest today with us, Dr. Gregory Jackson. Welcome, Dr. Jackson,
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. This is a lot of you cannot see it, but this studio is absolutely incredible. I want to keep asking questions about, wait, what's that? What's that? So absolutely remarkable.
Well, you can feel free to ask. So this is my first. You're my first guest in the new studio.
Yeah.
And I got the lights and the sound, deadening and all that good stuff. So hopefully it'll be nice and quiet for us to have a good conversation today.
Yeah.
This is episode number 54. I'm just super excited. I have this is the first live broadcast from the studio, and we'll do another one today at 1 o'clock with Dr. Kathy Hudnall. So, Dr. Jackson, thanks so much for being here, though.
Thank you. This is, again, just incredible honor and almost wondering, why me? Something I keep asking myself.
Well, we've talked a lot at conferences and things like that, and I just found it really interesting because your principal instrument is...
So, and this is where everyone actually gets a little bit confused because they see, what I did there at UA and the first things that were published and the first job I had. So I actually first started piano, then percussion, then violin.
Got it.
And currently now I feel my principal instrument is violin because that's what I do every day. I took a New Year's resolution that no matter what would happen every single day, I would practice. I'm using my Tonal Energy app. I'm at day 151, 152 now.
Oh, wow.
And that's been very difficult.
That's impressive.
Traveling. Yeah. So at Austin Peay, when I was there for undergrad, that's when I was a composition major.
Yeah. I know. Because you have a whole bunch of pieces out.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of different places that you're published.
Yeah.
Feel free to talk about it because I'm always interested to learn, new repertoire and, new music and things.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. And so I know, and there's several people that are in the string world that are current orchestra directors, and they are, sometimes considered, oh, well, they're from the band world. I never felt myself part of the band world because I was more of, for undergrad, I was a composition theory major.
Right.
And I remember the way I got started with violin, I took one of the pieces to... it was a violin sonata. Took it to the department chair, who was my music history professor. Just Dr. Fott, very, very old school and hardcore. At that time, we thought he was 90. Now he's, I think, 92, 93.
Oh, wow.
But actually, we couldn't believe this, play with the Charlie Daniels band.
Oh, really?
Never would have thought that from him. But took it to him, and in the lobby area, he just... tore into it like, we can't do that, and that double stop doesn't work, and where are the bowings, where's this, where's that? And at that point I thought, all right, I've got to learn violin with you because you're going to be very hardcore. So that's where I got started. Played with the, at that time Austin Peay had Community Symphony, now they have a full-fledged Gateway Orchestra and orchestra program, which in Clarksville, Tennessee, where I grew up, there were not orchestra programs,
right? Yeah,
at all. So,
where is Clarksville near?
So, 40 miles northwest of Nashville.
Okay,
along the state line by Fort Campbell. So that's why I get asked a lot if I'm military because I grew up that way.
Yeah. Okay.
But I and then when I went to grad school at University of Alabama. Same thing, there were not orchestra programs in the schools, and I didn't really know something like this existed until I was doing some interviews and on the band side, which I only did band director for 3 years. But
did you have to do marching band and all that?
Yeah. Well, and for that part, I'm still fine with. I'm still working in the drum corps area.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah.
But I get nervous when I go to camps and thinking, what if I have to play something? Because I haven't touched a pair of sticks in, I don't know, last summer.
Okay. So, okay.
I bought into the whole thing, but that's when I started finding out that there were so many orchestra programs in Georgia, and showed my wife one of the schools. I'm like, look at this. It was Duluth. They have 400.
Yeah. Yeah.
This must be the one program in the state. And she said, you know, that's what you need to do, because my master's thesis was string trio. Most of my early pieces were for strings, and, you know, started writing symphonies at that point. And I thought, I'll apply. Nobody's going to look at me. And it happened. So
yeah.
I'm just extremely, extremely fortunate and blessed by that. And this has been the absolute best thing. Like, I've had other calls come in for different things, and I keep saying no because this is absolutely what I love to
do. So you're at South Cobb High School here in Cobb County. Well, I'm with you now.
Yep.
'Cause you were here before me. Tell us a little bit about your programming situation and about your school, and how long have you been there?
This will be my fourth year now.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was funny welcoming you into the district when I was still pretty new, but all of your resources were really, really helpful when I was starting the job during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, the fact that, wow, you're going to be in the same district, that was just pretty awesome.
I gotta say, it's been like a great first year. I had the support of everybody, including the colleagues like yourself and school admin, district admin. My parents were just unbelievably amazing, and it was just super awesome all around.
Yeah, and what I hope people also remember, again, for people listening, I hope you realize that, you know, Charles did not pay me to say these different things, but I'll
pay you later.
Also, I really have to say some great things now. But I think the district now realizes, and I think Laster realizes now, how fortunate they are to have you. I mean, you are, and it's funny to talk about all the great things you've done in the past, but then there's just even more things. And, I want to get on South Cobb, but real quick, if some listeners don't know, you want to let them know some of these incredible opportunities you have coming up, Alaska and everywhere.
Yeah. So I'll be there next week doing like 4 days worth of PD for the teachers up there. And it was kind of interesting. I went back in November, and this is the first opportunity I've gotten where people have said, we found you on your YouTube channel, we want you to come out. So I was like, okay. So I'm doing that. And I went out in November, did like a 1 day, all day presentation thing. And they're like, we want you to teach this class, two day classes for 2 days of beginning pedagogy, 2 days of advanced intermediate pedagogy. And the teachers, they just do continuing education credits. And that's what I'm going to be doing. So I'll be there in Anchorage next Monday. I leave, and then I get back Saturday. So it was a pretty cool opportunity. And then I just found out too that I'm going to be doing their Allstate in November. So yeah, so it's gonna be pretty cool. So I think I'll be Alaska'd out after all this happens, but I'm excited about the opportunities. And so it's cool.
Yeah. One of my favorite shows each Tuesday, well, it's on Discovery Channel. I'll say that way. So that way we don't get into some sort of, copyright claim thing, but it's about Alaska crab fishing.
Oh, so yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, if you want to make a quick 50 or 60,000 in a week, maybe go on the boat.
I've heard it's crazy there, but you put yourself at risk. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you may make the money, then you come back saying, oh, so I lost two fingers.
Right. Right. Yeah. Is it worth it? Not if you're a string player. No, you got to know that.
So, one thing is where luckily I don't have to put my body at risk like that is there in South Cobb. I started during the pandemic. So the first time that I met students, it was, you know, through a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
The one great thing about it is I could see all of the different names. So I didn't have to memorize 80-something people.
That's just good.
Yeah, so that did help. But I thought about it this morning where, you know, I taught collegiate for a while, and that was cool. But the one thing I may not like about doing, you know, high school is that the students graduate.
Right, yeah. You get them where you want them, and then they're gone.
You know, my first year wasn't so bad because the majority of them stayed virtual. But last year and then this year, they finish up a week early or so. And at that point, we then get to that first day of class when they're not there. And it's almost sad. And then most of the people in my mastery orchestra, they had academic testing that day, which I literally had four people in the room at that point. I mean, it was just...
Yeah.
It was very weird.
I don't know. I found May is pretty much just a wash with almost all the kids. We do our spring concert at the end of April, and then May is just it's just a wash.
Yeah.
You know?
See, last year, because we were preparing to have the first, you know, true chamber orchestra there for South Cobb, most of May was spent just really, really getting into techniques that they weren't familiar with, which that was kind of surprising about. So I took from Elizabeth H. Green's orchestral bindings, took that and just put it on.
That's a great resource right there. Yeah.
And then this past summer, I was at Messiah University finishing up orchestral conducting program. And
string. Did you do a degree there, or did you just do a certificate or just some classes? Or
certificate, because when I was the band director at St. James, and the way that happened, I was not really planning to leave ASU. And for those that love to see like a very, you know, straight line approach in an interview, I'm sorry, this is very stream of conscious right now, but, you know, just trying to make sure we see how all the dots connect. And I'm even going to connect a dot with what you mentioned in Alaska. So, you know, that's the
there we go.
Music theorist part of me. But I was not planning to, you know, I had tenure, so why would I leave? I was teaching music theory.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about, I mean, I know that we're taking it aside, but tell us a little bit about your background and, and like the positions that you've held.
Yeah. So mentioned Austin Peay State University, and that's where it's music theory, composition major, and first traditional student to get a degree in composition there with Dr. Wood. Wow,
cool.
Still in touch with him. I hate when he calls or will send an email, say, "This is Jeff." I'm like, "No, you're Dr. Wood, you're not Jeff."
Yeah.
But still in touch with him, and went to University of Alabama for master's in music composition and theory, and really loved the professors there. So stayed and was performance. I thought I could do I took still all the classes for a composition theory major, but after a couple of years, they were like, "Yeah, we don't do a double doctorate."
Oh, okay.
And there were some places they did, but they did not.
Yeah.
When I was finishing the last year, I got the offer for Alabama State University in Montgomery. So I was driving back and forth on Saturdays to finish my dissertation, and did teach percussion there, taught music theory, pretty much all of the music theory classes, because I was the music theory chairperson at that time. And then while there, after 10 years, got the offer for St. James, which I was really meeting with head of school to help him find someone. I was not sincerely, but once he started just saying, "You can do whatever you want with the program. There's a strings class. You can start an orchestra," at that point.
Oh, wow. It's like, nice.
Okay.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is what I've been looking for. So
great.
Yeah, but 6 through 12 is what I taught.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed how I taught just a little because I was very kind of old school, hard-nosed type. But when you see a little kid like that.
You got soft.
I got soft. Until a veteran director that would come in. And, you know, he actually ended up being the first cousin of one of my composition professors
that
had just passed away at UA. And I remember Tom Borden saying, when you're giving discipline, don't smile. I'm like, what? And I say, but they're little kids. I'm 6'2". And it's like, it's not effective. The very next class, some, you know, seventh grader did something, didn't smile, just told him, you know, what not to do. And it was so effective. And, you know, it was great having him come in so many times each week. You know, he mentioned don't talk too much, which right now, you know, I'm talking too much.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, but this is what we do on the podcast. What are we going to do? We can't sit here.
I can't just sit there. And,
I guess, you know, we could play, but.
Yeah, you know, talk about each other's eyebrows. But he was mentioning keep the baton moving. And then a few days later, one of the, maybe Instrumental Magazine, one of those came in. And that was the number one tip for conductors, keep the baton moving. And that's actually where I fell in love with conducting. I was wanting to improve my technique, found Leonard Bernstein doing Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a mistake watching that late at night. I couldn't go to sleep until 3 or 4 because I kept watching.
Kept going,
it,
yeah.
Kept it watching. Just hit me so much, so... I then started buying pretty much every conducting text you could get, and then realized that, you know, would like to move to Georgia because the programs are so great. So I enrolled at University of Georgia for their Master of Music Ed program.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And then the pandemic hit. So
yeah,
I think I got the acceptance letter right before we shut down. So that, except for, I think, one time I went on campus, it was online.
That was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad because that summer gave me a chance to see, all right, this is what they're doing, teaching online. I'm about to teach online. So it kind of worked hand in hand a little. So I did that in education with conducting emphasis. And then at Messiah University, wanted to just focus on conducting.
Right.
Didn't make sense to do another degree. So that was Certificate of Advanced Graduate Studies. So
got it. Okay.
I was in Pennsylvania all last summer, string pedagogy and conducting. It was
okay.
Great.
Yeah. The awesome guy that took over my position at Alpharetta, Jake Hood, just finished his master's there. You know, Jake?
We spent the summer together.
Okay. Yeah. So he's great, and I know that he just did his master's recital with some of the Alpharetta kids, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I heard that program is really just it's actually really good, even though it's online. It's like he raved about it.
I wouldn't think something like that would work, but after going through UGA with it being that way, like doing a master's defense online, it was so weird. And then I remember I wore a suit, you know, just from
that. Yeah, well,
and the research professor was like, wow, look at you, wore a suit and everything.
What are you gonna do? Yeah,
but even though Messiah was mostly online, that that time in Pennsylvania with the professors and with the other students like Jake, the one thing I keep remembering about Jake when and with Messiah, so they split different categories. They had new to strings, then those who, you know, I guess majored, and then those that were kind of like the pro cast.
Okay.
And I was fine being in the category when we split up with Jake, and that was sort of the, I was glad the professor thought I played well enough to be with that group. But it was violin and viola. I only started viola in June.
Yep.
And at that point, like, you know, Jake and I forgot the other girl's name. I mean, we're sight reading all this stuff from, you'll have to help me with name, Sossmanhaus?
Oh, yeah. Kurt Sossmanhaus. I think that's how you say it. From Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We were supposed to find issues in the book. So, but we were deep into it. Like, the, you know, I saw that some of the things where he has it, you know, scheduled for kind of easier. It's really like Suzuki grade six. So
that, yeah, that would be easier. Yeah. I think for, cause his level, cause they were playing all the major.
Yeah. Yeah, but sight reading down viola.
No.
And you know, I was getting a little frustrated. I went to her. I'm like, can you put me with the other group? She's like, no, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. And I hate it, but the very next day, it did start clicking on viola, where I didn't feel, because I felt like I was holding Jake and the other girl back, because I'm like, I'm not doing this. And
what, now, were they on their principal instrument? Was like Jake on cello?
Nope.
Oh, everybody's on.
He was on viola, but okay. What made me realize, well, the strings are the same for cello and viola. So
yeah.
It may not have been quite so bad, but the what I was going to say about Jake that was funny, I remember times we were you know, kind of playing through stuff before playing as an ensemble, and he would have the violin set up like a cello and doing this.
My high school orchestra teacher, he was a cellist, and he's the reason I'm here, one of the reasons. But every time he demonstrated, he would show us, and for me, like, to see the shifting and see the fingers going down from that point of view was actually really, really helpful. But he played everything. Every example he played is a cello. He rarely played on his shoulder.
And at first I thought he was kind of kidding. Then he said, oh, no, I'm a cellist. I'm like, oh, okay, makes sense. But, I mean, there were a couple times I played around with my class. And actually, if I'm showing them something, it is easier if you're, you know, in a large room. It's not like a private lesson. You have 40, 50, however many in there. It is easier to show them at this point, like, hey, you're going to shift here to this point. Because when it's up here, at that point, they're like, they can't see it as well. So I think from a teaching perspective, it's not quite so bad.
Yeah.
So.
No.
Anyhow,
that's good. No, that's there really you go. Cool.
So those are all the degrees and schools, and that's what I'm doing in South Cobb, trying to get things turned around. I do feel that for LGPE, I don't want to say over-programmed. I felt that, you know, Mendelssohn's String Symphony at 10, I thought it was in their wheelhouse, but I felt like they didn't, what the band director and I were talking about is, they didn't really have that champion mindset of you hit that wall and then you either just kind of stop or, okay, now we got pushed and get the pass just playing the notes on the page. So those last 3 weeks, they just didn't quite get there. So what I'm planning to do now is, when I say a little bit easier, I mean, we're talking about a piece that is supposed to be grade six. I'm not, really, it's a professional piece. So, you know, I'm looking at probably doing grade five for them and having it be music that is really, really in their wheelhouse that will
there's,
show their
you know,
strengths.
There's what I found is that there's, like, within each level, there's going to be the harder grade fives and the easier grade fives. And so my orchestra, my chamber orchestra, we went as a grade five this year. And, you know, we played, I would say, kind of middle to the upper range of the grade five. And I could have maybe stretched it and taken them as a grade six, but you know, being that I was new, I wasn't sure how they would be able to do 100%, like when it came down to it. And so we just, but they ate it up. They loved the program. They loved the pieces. And then, and they brought it, you know, they did, I thought they played pretty much their very best that they could have for that, you know, at the time.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, man. I've done this myself. If you have music that is so utterly difficult and you're just worried about trying to get the notes on page, what chance do you have of making any music?
Oh, no. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the thing is if you're just barely making the notes, you're not going to be able to do any kind of musical, have any musical effect at all.
And our supervisor, Dr. Farrell, came in 2 or 3 weeks before, you know, to observe. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, they'll be fine if they watch. Like, thank you. Please say that to them. Because
whenever you bring someone in, all of a sudden, like, they listen, you know, and like they're the expert as soon as it doesn't matter if they're more experienced, less experienced, or whatever. If they're a guest, they're the authority at that point.
Well, they didn't watch. And one of the adjudicators said, you know, if they would watch, it would be fine. And
bam. You're like, bam, that's it. That's exactly what I was saying.
But here's the great part.
Love when the adjudicators just justify everything that you've said for 8 weeks. It's like, it's the greatest feeling.
Well, no. Part of their final was to write a reflection and to see how many of the students mention, like the younger group saying, wow, you know, the older group, the chamber group, they watch the conductor, and I think we would do better if we watch. Like, great.
What? Yeah.
And even the older students saying, you know, this time we watched more, and that helped with phrasing and musicality, and we had, like, it was the best, for those graduating, the best concert they ever had.
Nice.
So I'm hoping that carries through now. They can start watching, because there's more to it. It's the communicating part. The group that won National Orchestra Festival last year, not this past year, Eau Claire?
Eau Claire, I forget where they were from.
Florida, maybe? Okay. Melbourne.
And that's right, Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I remember before I knew that was, you know, Deborah Baker Monday sitting behind us. And
Baker Monday,
And a couple of others. And, you know, we're all looking at each other like, what? Because they were playing the whole program memorized.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've never done that. And it's impressive.
Yeah.
And they really know it. You just wonder how many extra rehearsals did it take to do that?
Well, we did some looking. I think it's like a, like almost like a high school conservatory type.
Okay.
And there's a few schools in Florida like that.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
For sure.
But what I loved about it is they were able to communicate. And that was the important thing, the communication part.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did it well. And, you know, Chris Selby's group this year, like it was just, they totally killed it. They totally killed it. Speaking of, I want to take a second. In my last little teaser, I talked about some of the upcoming PD workshops that are available this summer. And I want to make sure that you all know that I missed out on one of my very great friends, Chris Selby and Margaret Selby. They have a Summer String Institute. I'm going to show you my screen here in a second. There. Hold on. I'm getting there. There it is. If I can go back. There it is. The Habits Institute that they're doing this summer in Charleston, North Carolina. They're going to be it's a band, chorus, and orchestra event, but it's Wednesday, July 5th, July 6th, and July 7th. And at the end of that workshop, there is a really cool harbor dinner cruise, which sounds super fun. So, but all the great, great people, Chris and Margaret, of course, and then Jonathan Glaw, who teaches up in Michigan, will be there. Dr. Tim is doing a keynote and a couple lectures as well. So you definitely want to check out the Selby's Habits Institute. And if you don't know the Habits book that Chris wrote, it's an awesome, awesome book, both the high school book and there's a middle level book. And then I know Margaret and, Sarah Blackball from Gwinnett County are working on that beginning book now too. So definitely check it out. It's habitsuniversal.com, their website. And I wanted to give them a shout out. And it's important that, you know, we keep our skills up in the summer. And if you could do something fun, like go to a 3-day workshop and then a dinner cruise in Charleston. And if you haven't been to Charleston, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. So I wanted to at least give them a shout out and talk about their
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover
inside the house there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Their upcoming workshop that will be happening this summer, so right after the 4th of July.
Another shout out for them. Have you heard anything about the newer or updated Habits book that he is?
No.
Okay. Just didn't know that we could go ahead and plug something.
Oh, I don't know. No, I haven't heard about it. Is it coming out or?
Supposedly pretty soon.
Okay. So well, keep an eye out for that, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a great book, though. Great book. Chris just does amazing work, and I'll have to get him on here to talk about it when it comes out, and Margaret too, Margaret and Sarah, when their book comes out.
I think that would be great. It's one that I keep going back to on the library shelf.
Yep.
You know, this summer the plan is to read Galamian again, but the one that, you know, just has some of those really helpful.
It's the principles of violin playing. Yeah, was a big part of my my teaching and learning. And my teacher was a Galamian student, Howard Beebe. So I'm kind of a Galamian grandchild.
Yeah,
you know, pedagogically, and he all the principles that my teacher followed were all Galamian. He would do a great impression of Galamian as well. You know, and he actually smoked probably just as much as more than Galamian did. That was when you can smoke in public buildings.
Yeah.
You know, so I just remember like doing my Kreutzer etudes and kind of like coughing in the middle of it but like the whole studio is filled with smoke, and I remember it. But I owe Howard Beebe, my violin teacher, the world. Like I owe him the world, because I was very underprepared going into my undergraduate degree, and he made me cry so many times and whipped me into shape that I'll never be. I'm just so grateful for him.
Those are the professors that you remember, I still remember bringing 4 measures in for a composition lesson, and Dr. Wood pretty much cussed me out, then turned around to the board, and I. It's like wiping tears away, you know, didn't want him to see it, but, you know, I needed that type of hardcore teaching.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Actually, I was going to say maybe not what's needed now, but times when I have students get frustrated and they come into the office and start crying, those are the ones that I can tell, hey, you know, don't feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. It's good. It means that you care.
And
we then usually have a connection at that point, and that's one of the best feelings.
Yeah. I mean, there's that fine line of how tough could you be but not be a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
always tough line.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to go back to where you mentioned how they you know, Alaska just sort of found you through your links. At the end of one of our summer PD institutes, was it January or was it summer where Scott Laird was here?
That was the spring, I think, wasn't it? Or was it the fall? It's a blur.
Yeah, I think it had to be January because I met him.
It was January.
Yeah.
It was January.
Because we spoke a little when he was the...
After the new... Orchestra. We went back to school. Yep. Yeah, that's right.
And he had mentioned something about doing a guest conducting thing somewhere, and it finally popped in my head. And as talking about with students, I'm usually saying over and over to believe in yourself and that you are doubting yourself and picking up, but it is in my head constantly. Like I'm over and over you know, I think I even started off today, like, why me? And these different things that pop up even with Asta, I'm thinking, why me? So I'm trying to not have that type of mindset. Or it's okay that if you think it, but just don't give life to those words. So he mentioned something about guest conducting. So afterwards, I spoke to him and just said, you know, I hate to ask because it feels like I'm, you know, self-promoting, but how do you get in that arena of guest conducting? And he told me the story of how with him it started because he wrote an article and, you know, didn't think anybody read it. But then somebody contacted him and said, hey, you know, loved your article. Would you like to guest conduct this? And from there, it just kept going and going. So it's the same thing with your resource now. People are seeing this, seeing the great work that you're doing. And this is, to me, the first of many. You're probably going to start getting more and more different things. But yeah, that's how it starts. Just somebody sees something you're doing. And I think that if you're doing, you know, working incredibly hard and showing how passionate, how invested you are into this, others are going to feel. And I think student performers with the music that we were just talking about, with if the students connect, what I had written on the board when they came back in January was emotional investment. You know, if they aren't emotionally invested in the music, how can you expect an audience to connect with it? And I believe that is the very, very important, you know, tool for everything that we look at.
I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree. So what are some of the, upcoming, you have any projects you're working on or any compositions you're working on or, things that you see in the profession that, you know, you're excited about or that are bothering you or anything like that?
Well, I don't want to get assassinated, so I'll keep away from bothered by. I felt like at, Allstate, I was asking too many questions, so. Thought,
like what kind of questions as far as what are you referring to?
Okay, so I
like, is it like a GMEA thing or like policies or is it bigger picture items in music ed world?
You know, I'll give the secrets of what I did, but me newer to the state, I was not going to start asking questions. My favorite movie is The Godfather. I just didn't want to come up missing, so. I started kind of going to each person like, hey, so why don't we have a list of who's next? Because, you know, going to the adjudicators, like, I don't know if I have anyone next. And, you know, I was in Alabama judging Allstate and there was a list, or the students would get their score sheets back. And I know
it could be a mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what did I do wrong? I don't know. You didn't make it. Yeah.
And I remember when I took the St. James gig, and the string bass player was like, yeah, I remember you from Allstate. I'm like, did I score you well, you know, to know whether you like me? Yeah. Things were fine. I'm like, thank goodness.
That's good. You know, don't want to be known as the mean guy, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we all feel that way when we adjudicate. And we're like, well, you know, you have to kind of like hold up your values, but, you know, you have to also make sure that you're not, you know, giving a rainbow of scores. You know, I've seen groups, unfortunately, get a 1, a 2, and a 3 from the 3 judges. And it's like, what do we do? What do we do from there? You know?
Yeah. And that's the bad thing. It's, you know, subjective versus objective. You know, with sports, it is pretty clear if the person sometimes it's clear if they hit a home run or not. Mm-hmm. You know, if it, you know, hits the glove or hits a fan, you know, so there can be some little bit of judging things, but with music, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, that's really the only thing, and I kind of said that to enough people where it seems that it was brought up in some meetings. I'm like, okay, good. That's the way. I'll just kind of work behind the scenes to get things.
Yeah, I think they, you know, I think part of it is, and maybe I'm wrong, 100% wrong, but is they, you know, just don't want to get in the situation like, well, this person got this score and this person got this score, but they got in and it was this close. And there was just, that was, you know, like there's all these like small, like parameters or differences or, right, you know, like slight discrepancies that are going to happen when you're judging, you know, 8 billion violins. I mean, I think I've done the violin room before for like 9, 10, and it was like, or middle school, and it was like hundreds of them. Your brain goes kind of crazy. But there's not really a good way to do it.
But even to me, even if maybe the scores were cut off or something, the judges' comments are really helpful.
Yeah.
And
I'll also say that there were times when you would just jot down a note or two, and it wasn't like comments because you have a minute or 2 minutes to listen to an excerpt. But
even that note or two, I thought would
okay.
help. Yeah. So to me, the comments will help. Or if, you know, since we have so much technology stuff now, maybe it'll be too much. But kind of like with LGPE, you have recorders. Maybe after the student leaves, you can say, well, hey, you know, student needs to work on fourth finger vibrato, and they probably should do more shifting, or there's imbalance in string crawl, whatever it is, just something where the student now knows, okay, that's what I can work on. But anyways,
there's a little takeaway from it, and for a lot of kids, it's a sight reading that they bomb, you know, because it can be challenging, and you know, kids can practice all day and all night and get that excerpt or the, you know, the etude down, but when it comes to sight reading, it's like that's it, you know.
Which to me is weird. I know a year or two ago, had my concertmaster was waiting for a, you know, tennis match or volleyball or something, and she was practicing. I'm like, hey, let's sight read, let's go, you know. And you know, I was scared because I mean she's incredible, and I'm like, I'm going to get blown out of the water. And it was the reverse. I'm like, I'm out sight reading you? Come on. Like, it shouldn't be that. But she saw that as a weakness, and she improved, graduated now. Hopefully she will keep going. But sight reading is something that has to be done a lot more. So that's not necessarily one of the projects I have coming up as far as writing sight reading book. But
right.
One of the recent projects you did see when you mentioned Kreutzer, that was the whole inspiration for the book of violin etudes that I did.
Which... Yeah, those are, and they're not easy. So this guy wrote this crazy book of etudes. He's like, go for it. You got this. Yeah.
So,
and I haven't had a chance to like play them, but I did look through it and I was like, whoa, I got to practice on this one.
And the copies were not for you all to, you know, go back to the woodshed. Like, for you and David and many people that listen to the book.
Oh, that's right. You gave David Doak a book, too, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I did, because you all took so much time. Like, you know, you didn't know me, but if I had different questions or comments or anything, you always took time. So
sure,
that was my thank you. My way of thanking people is... I write music. So mainly when I was handing those to y'all at Asta, it was like, yeah, look, I put you in the book. So 100 years from now, people will, you know, realize, oh, wow, this guy actually knew Charles. Lucky him. Then I didn't know David was actually going to practice through it. And he wrote, good grief. And at that point, I'm like, oh, no, because... I really tried to write easy. A couple of pieces that I just finished up, they're supposed to be easier, and I really have to think about it. So one project I have now, I think I'm just about finished with the first movement for my first violin concerto.
Whoa, cool.
I now just got to fill things in. I tried so hard to not be one of those challenging people, you know, like it's not the sare cadenza or anything.
It's you don't want to be the person who's like, well, that's impossible,
well,
you know, or I'm just gonna make it as hard as I can for you to play my music.
Well, one concert where ran into David at was ASO was doing the Britten concerto, And to read in the program notes that Brennan loved extended techniques and threw every technique possible in there, like, I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
And so this piece, even though most of my composition influences from Rachmaninoff and Shostakovich, Tchaikovsky,
cool.
kind of Beethoven for form, this one is really following sort of the style and form of Sibelius, which didn't see that, but like it's a really great, the Sibelius is a really great concerto.
Yeah.
But I'm following a lot of forms from Mendelssohn as well, as far as like not having a double exposition, but going straight into it. I'm most likely after this cadenza and recapitulation, I'll probably have it go straight into the second movement because it's already.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
A little bit longer than I planned. This first movement is like around 14 minutes. That's
a little bit long.
So put this out in history for 150 years from now, but the plan is to write second and third movement short. Like, I'm not going to be Shostakovich and have you in there for 40, 45 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty great doing this. It's difficult because, again, I want the challenge, and there's certain things where I really love, like the what I or a lot of people call the Paganini bowing, you know? Like, you know, there's just certain things where it just worked with the music. So I'm putting it there. So at some point, you and David, probably once you're done traveling, will start getting some little things like, hey, is this okay? Because the first part of it, I could play. Like, I'm in, you know, I play Kreutzer, and like, I'm in okay violinist. I'm not anywhere near the level as you and David. Sorry.
Yeah, David is a really good player.
And yeah. You too. People, you need to see Dr. Lau play. He's incredible.
No.
Yeah, he is. Because we have our reading things, and I'm usually sitting behind you. And
I can play the grade four music.
there was one piece. Did you do the Georgia meeting back in September?
Fall workshop.
Was it Westminster?
The fall workshop?
Yeah.
I don't think I was able to go because of baseball.
Oh, games. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I missed that one.
I'll be honest. I was sight reading everything. I was fine. But then we did one of the Joseph Ballone pieces.
I don't know him.
Yeah. You know, now we're starting to see all these works. And as soon as I saw Sevenlitz, I started coughing. I'm like, I need some water. And then they started. And then I'm seeing all the others like stopping and just giving up. Like, yeah, I'm not sight reading that. So I jumped in on the next piece. But
yeah.
But yeah, like I could play the concerto I'm writing to a point, but it's now at a point where I can't play some of this.
So. And I know that, you know, I get this, and I'm sure everybody does out there, you know, that imposter syndrome, you know, where you just like, I don't think I'm good enough to be able to do this. Or I think like whenever I give a presentation, I'm like, well, they're going to know everything I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it doesn't, I mean, obviously there are times when people know a lot, but not everybody's like, oh yeah, I've heard this a million times before. So it's, but we get that, you know, and it, in terms of, teaching and playing and performing and, working with our kids and, you know, all the things that we're expected to do. I think that imposter syndrome can be pretty detrimental sometimes.
And that's one reason I try giving what I hear people say, giving people their flowers. I try letting you all know, hey, you're doing some great things, because a lot of times we see a person, we think, oh, well, they believe they have it all together. I don't need to tell them they did something great, but they need to hear that because it plays through my head all of the time. I, sure. So right now, or I guess starting tomorrow or starting July 1st, I'll be the chair for the mentoring committee for ASTA.
Oh, nice.
But then I got asked to be on the content chair, content committee with Dwayne.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But at that point, I was thinking, why me? You know? And then I got an email from Lynn Tuttle about the new Canon project they're doing.
Right.
Well, that was something I wanted to submit my pieces to get looked at. Instead, they want me to kind of vet some of the composers and be one of the mentors. And I was, again, sitting there like, why me? Like, what? I'm not. And again, it's okay to think, you know, hey, I'm not good enough, but you don't give that stuff life. Don't speak it. So I do want to start changing that part of my mind to think what should be good. There was someone that I'm working with at ASO, and she mentioned, hey, if you have something you want us to look at, let us know. I'm like, nothing's good enough. So about a year later.
Nothing's good enough for the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah. Because the symphony, you know, they're not going to commit, you know, 30, 40 minutes for an entire symphony,
right.
Not for a new person. And so I thought I'll write a similar to the Brahms overtures. So,
like a overture.
Yeah. And
fantastic.
I sent a recording to Bob Phillips because I knew it was going to be, even though he's not with Alfred, I knew it was going to be past their catalog, but just that was going to be sort of that first, this is what I'm writing like. And basically I tried as much as possible to make it like Brahms, because that's all orchestras want to play, Brahms, Beethoven. Yeah. but this piece might be good enough, you know?
Cool.
Well, I mean, not saying they're going to play, but I know that some pieces, if I think that it's not too hard, I'll find out there's something difficult. So I'm really trying to make sure that what I write is not just blazing difficult, unless it's a piece where I intend for it to be blazing difficult.
Yeah, that's awesome though.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
But those are the
hopefully that'll work out for you.
I hope so. I mean, those are things that I'm working on. I'll be honest, I kind of want this concerto done because I want to enjoy the summer and not feel guilty. I don't want to watch baseball game or do one of my hobbies and then feel guilty like you should be writing.
Right. Yeah. We have to do that. We have to. And I think I mentioned that in my last episode, is like taking time for yourself. Because we can get burned out, or we can get work, you know, just work so hard that we're like, keep going. And I'm doing this over the summer, but this is something that I enjoy doing and enjoy chatting. So it's work, but it's fun work. Yeah. And you know, we can take our work and make hobbies out of it, or, you know, I'm not teaching all summer. I'm teaching a little bit, and I get to go cool places and do that and meet some new people and whatnot. But I've already, like, over the last weekend, I was on the boat like 3 days already. So, wow.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, my intentions doing the podcast was not, you know, be the one to talk a lot. It's almost going to be secretly an interview for you too. So,
no.
But one question on that I have for you is, what are some different things you're doing to, because you have a lot going on. You're asked to, you know, Ohio State workshop over and over. Like
I went there, and ever since I was a TA with Bob, 2007, 2008, I've pretty much presented just about every year. And it's just one or two sessions, you know, but it's nice for me to get back to the homeland, which is, you know, and see people there and visit with Bob and everybody else, all my friends that are there. And then, this year, you know, maybe take a trip up home to Cleveland too. So see family and do all that as well.
And see, I didn't know, I don't know where I thought you were from in Ohio until I heard Cleveland. I was born in Des Moines, Iowa. So, you know, most of my family now has moved to Denver. I think one uncle's still in Des Moines. So, going to Des Moines isn't the thing. It's going to Clarksville or see my sister in DC. But But yeah, I mean, it's this store that's the one time of the year you get to go to Cleveland.
Yeah. This is pretty much it. Yeah. Visit family and, just like I said, spend some time on the lake and, I got tons of yard work to do and projects here and,
Yard work up there.
No, yard work here.
Okay, good.
Yeah. my backyard right there.
It's a beautiful area, but with all the trees.
Yeah. And I had a couple taken down and I have to still clear some wood and bonfires and get rid of it and stack it and deck staining and all those things that, a lot of homeowners do. I like to do it myself if I can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was supposedly doing some yard work, but I'm waiting for the rain. I've got some baby trees that are growing, and I just don't need that. So bought a shovel. I thought, I'm going to get this going, and the ground is just a little too hard. So I gave up. I'll wait for the rain to come.
And you have a home. There's always something that needs to be done.
But see, I'm further out. Is this Marietta or is it Kennesaw?
This is technically Marietta, but it's unincorporated Cobb County. So it's Marietta's mailing address, but we're not in a city.
Well, that's sort of, so I'm in Villarica, but it's the same thing. Like if I go to the Frog or the Publix a mile away, it's Dallas.
Okay.
So I'm really sort of in that Dallas and Hiram area, but pretty far away.
Yeah.
So what do you have coming up for this second year with Laster? Because, the first year was, I guess, you getting them to know you. But now, this is now your program. You're going to just go in and say, all right, everyone, we're playing electric guitars now. So
the cool part of this coming year is I had a really big freshman class, so now they're sophomores. I have about 55, 56 sophomores. Wow. I'm getting an incoming freshman class of about 50 to 55. I have a very small junior class of 30 and an even smaller senior class of 20, 21. So I can already see, my younger kids are going to be the bread and butter as this goes through. And obviously, we got to honor our seniors and all the work that they've put in and the juniors and take care of everybody. And even though the senior class is really small, they're great, good kids. And so we're just, trying to build upon some of the things we did last year, things that that went okay. I want to make good, even better. And then, one of the things I'm working on is a presentation on being the new person at your school. And I'm going to be presenting that at Ohio State, but being the new person at your school and what are some steps that you should take? What are things you have to remember? The do's and don'ts, don't change everything at once.
Yeah.
Continue to respect and honor your predecessor, which, my predecessor at Lasser was there for 29 years. She did amazing things in her time and highly respect the work that she put in and all the great things she did. So it's trying to continue that, but then also cultivate and build it the way that I would like to see it go and my little twists and turns and tricks and tips and all the things I want to do with it. But great. I have great students, a lot of energy, and my parent organization is just unbelievable. Like so many things that they've done this year that I wouldn't have been able to be successful without them. And then my admin and my colleagues there are just super supportive. And we did a little bit of full orchestra this year. We're hoping to do some more next year. And just any of the questions I had, people in Cobb were awesome. Just answering questions. Sarah Grimes was like my go-to for all things organization. Those type of things are just, continuing it. And but just trying to make it a little bit more mine and a little bit more the way I want to see it go. But obviously just, with the kids that are coming through, there's, they're COVID kids and some of them, didn't have, like my seniors when they left are like, yeah, this year we had COVID and then we had this. And so they really only had like a year and a half, maybe two full years of a normal high school experience. And so as those kids filter through, we want to try and make every year a little bit more normal, a little bit better for them and keep that going. So that's what I'm hoping for, but it's going to take time. And I'm not in a big hurry. I mean, this is where I'm going to end up, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and my last school, and but I got a long time left. I'm not planning on getting out of here anytime soon.
Which I'll be honest, when you know, I'm still part of the emails from, is it the Chronicle or Higher Ed?
Yeah,
or
sure.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that Ohio State thing pop open, I'm like, oh no. Please tell me they're not about to grab you.
Oh, but... no. I love public school. And I might do that when I retire, but I am finishing here in Cobb, and public school is where I was meant to be. I mean, that just, it's what I love. It's the kids, it's the day to day. And I love my work at Kennesaw and the university, but I just don't think I would want to go back right now, at least, you know?
Yeah. And that's where, you know, we have some parallels. Again, this isn't me blowing smoke or anything, but I striving when my admin will say, so what programs are you modeling South Cobb after? And, you know, one is Walton because they're incredible.
Yeah.
Hillgrove, Johns Creek. But when it comes to being the director, it's you. So, so that's why you probably thought when I emailed something.
I'm going to take myself off the screen now because I'm blushing here. No,
but it's so true. Like you are doing so much, and that's where, just starting to wonder then, like, yeah, like you doing this level is just the type of connection you have, because I talk collegiate too. Like you just, I don't know, it's just. Feels like there's more of a connection with public school, and I taught private school, and that was great. But like, I wasn't moving to Georgia to be at Cobb County, which there are some people that do that. But getting to this district and hearing the comments Chris said at our end of the year celebration, I mean, he's absolutely right. Like, I just haven't seen anything else like this. Mm-hmm. So this is where, you know, as you know, Lord willing, this is where I'll stay unless, you know, Gustavo leaving LA. If he says, Greg, I need you to come in, take over, you know,
come like, on in.
I may still say, hey, I'm sorry, but, you know, I love it here. And the things that I believe you're going to be able to do, you know, where you were at before was really, really great program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Jake is going to do really well because he's got that set up. But, you know, you're coming to a program with a lot of history. I'll be honest, like each program I've been at, it's always been a rebuild. Mm-hmm. Everything's been rebuilding, and that's fine. But now you're coming to like a historical type of school that, you know, everyone knew of because of Alfred Watkins on the band side. So the things like I really feel that, you know, you're just having this start, but you're going to see some things just explode over there. And
I'm hoping for that. Yeah, I mean, so I can see it happening, you know, in the next 3-4 years. Once my last year's freshmen are come up, I can see some really cool things happening too.
And it may happen sooner than you think. I know that like where we ended this past year, it's where I was projecting maybe 5 or 7 years down the road, and we got there a little bit sooner. I was not looking to start doing that type of literature. So you may see that like this might be the year when you start saying, oh, we're getting ahead of my projected plan. So
that would be nice. Prepared. I'm not going to complain if that happened, you know, but and I'm not in a big hurry to get to GMEA or whatever and, you know, play there. It just, when they're ready, they're ready.
Well, it's about the journey, not the destination. That's something I keep reminding myself. And those great things, like, they're just going to come. And same thing, pinpoint back to the Alaska thing. It just kind of happened organically. And that's how things are going to happen as well, that, you know, the new governor in however many years, I don't know when his term is up, but at some point, you know, they're going to have the election party thing, and then they may say, hey, my nephew went to last year, I want your orchestra to come play, You know, so, you know, like there's just things in the pipeline that you don't see coming, and it's going to happen. So I think you're in a just remarkable place to be, and I think, like, I'm excited to see the different things that happen. And I want the reason why I'm saying these kinds of things on a podcast is because I want people to, as they're seeing these incredible guests you have, like you had Dr. Hopkins,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I've got his two gigantic books, you know.
It's a great resource, and his YouTube channel is like second to none. I mean, it's so great.
But I don't want people, especially students or those who are new to the teaching realm, to see their colleagues or their friends do something great, and then the jealousy sets in, like, well, why then? Well, you need to celebrate as people have things going on, because as you do that, I feel everything's a test. And then as it's seen how you're doing that, then you're going to be rewarded. And same thing. So,
well, that's why I love making the resources that I make and putting those out there, because I like when people use them and they're like, this helped me. I'm like, good. That's what it's for. I mean, selfishly, I do make them some of the things for my students as well. Yeah. And I use them, but there's a lot that I put out there that are just kind of like, well, for me to think about and for other people. So, I enjoy that part, you know, giving back and as much as I can, you know, because it really is about the kids. It really is about, for the betterment of the profession and for the future of the kids. Cause my favorite thing is seeing what my former students do with their lives. Like, what, you know, the careers they go into, doesn't have to be music. The families they build, the people that they are, you know, that's for me, well, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I got an invitation a few weeks ago. Didn't know what it was. First, I thought it was, I don't know what type of card, Easter or something like that. And then I read, I'm like, who are these names? And then I realize John Faulkner Cunningham. Faulkner is what I called him. I'm like, he's getting married. I started teaching him when he was 10.
That's the best. It's the best.
And, you know, it's in Mississippi. It's this weekend. That's why I'm saying it's funny you mentioned that. Also, I guess, licensed teacher in Bujinkan martial arts. Mm-hmm. And there's very, very big thing happening this Saturday. So I won't be able to. At first, I thought, okay, I can train in Dunwoody and then drive to Jackson, Mississippi and make it in time. It's not going
to
happen.
It's hard. So. Yeah. It's hard to make everything. You know, I had a graduation party for one of my Alpharetta kids this Saturday, and I wasn't able to go because I had someone, you know, coming to help me fix the deck that needed to be, you know, and it was just bad timing. And I felt terrible, but it's, you know, you can't do everything, I guess.
But that connection, that's what's so cool, that, you know, you are not there, but those students were still connected to you and they wanted you to be there. Yeah. And
it's fun to see that, you know, I still follow the Alpharetta Instagram, and it's just neat to see their senior pictures, and it shows where they're going to school. And it's like, that's really cool.
Yeah. Really, and cool. I feel that happens a bit more with what we're doing now as high school orchestra directors than, you know, I've got a couple of students that I'm still in touch with from ASU, but we're talking 10 years there, and really just one that I'm in touch with. And that's because, you know, when I started there, he was almost my age.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's awesome seeing how, you know, the impact that you've already made on the lives of these students. And same way we talk about our previous teachers, it's weird, but I guess hopefully they will speak about us in a good way too.
Mm-hmm.
May not be me so much. It might be, oh, I can't believe this man, what he made me do.
Yeah, no. It's like I said, one of the greatest things in the world is just getting to see what your kids do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome, and I'm so glad that you're here and being able to spend some time, you know, with us and just chatting about everything we've chatted about. So I hope you'll have a awesome summer. You have any other big plans for the summer?
So when I was standing by, and I appreciate you and David not shooing me off at celebration thing, but I was standing by hearing y'all like Yellowstone and Alaska and all this, and I kind of sat back. I thought, please don't ask me what I'm doing, because for 3 years I was taking classes.
And now you just, yeah, this is the time that you need to do that.
Well, when you all start talking about that, I then realized, what do I have planned? Oh my God, I don't know. My wife has been helping her mom a lot, who's been going through a lot of serious illness. So the one thing that did pop up, my niece is in DC. They're getting baptized, so my mom wants to go up there. So I guess we're taking a trip to DC, and then still working with Southwind Drum Corps, so I'll go down and visit them a little bit.
When does that start or end, the drum corps? Or is it all summer?
So it started back in November. I just haven't been. And the couple of dates I had planned to work, they had changed date or location. But starting, I guess, sometime next week or the week after, they'll have move-ins. So I'll go to Mobile area a couple of times and just kind of say, hey, this is what works, that doesn't make sense, that sort of thing. I'm not really in there teaching notes or anything like that. It's like, for me, it's more of the overall program. Nice. Like how is that the storytelling part. So I'll do that when, kind of, I hate to say whenever I feel like, because for this year I told them I sort of want to do this pro bono, like let the other staff, they're flying in, let them get whatever money. I don't want to hit the budget, so I'll just go and help out next year,
nice,
God pay me. But I've been working with them since 2019, so, or 2018, so I've got a connection. But
cool.
Besides that, I'm really eyeing this Habits conference now.
Okay. I
did not have that on the radar, but to see Dr. Tim is going to be there, like, he's another one of the huge.
And you got, I don't know if you know Jonathan Glaw, but you need to meet him too. He's awesome.
Yeah,
he's
so awesome. I'm probably going to figure out a way to make that happen.
Cool.
And hopefully get to a Braves game or
two. For sure.
Yeah.
So. Well, I do want to give our audience, just give you a shout out to our audience. Your website is inner3.com. What is that, inner3?
All right, so
I'm just curious because you have your publications and everything on here.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and get to the bad thing. I think you're going to see a quote, and I'll have to explain that if it is on this page. But took a while to figure out, to think about more of like a brand thing. Okay, this quote is okay. But a lot of my
some pieces, of your quotes are not okay, though. We will not share that.
No, there's the one quote. So
okay.
All right. So as far as that one about he's the Bach of our time, it was sort of a joke where piano professor at ASU was walking through the hallway and he said, well, if it isn't the Bach of our time. I'm like, and then I went to help out another program there in Montgomery and said, I wonder if you're going to be like Bach. You're not really known
until
after you die.
And until afterwards.
I was teaching that a lot in music history courses, and that took weight off my shoulders. I thought, I'm okay with that. Like, what I'm writing may not be that popular now, but 100 years from now, they'll say, wow, he was ahead of his time.
There you go.
But but so Inner Three and a lot of the pieces that I write, even if it may not be just outright there, it's usually connected to my faith. And at the end of each piece, I have SDG. Again, caught that from teaching music history course, where Bach wrote Soli Deo Gloria.
Okay.
And since I've started doing that, it becomes tough, especially like with this concerto. There's things I want to write because it was supposed to be the next Tchaikovsky, and it's not. It's going this route of, like I said, the Sibelius. Didn't see that coming. And I think the more I take my ego out of it, of, okay, this is what has to be in the piece, and it has to sound like this, and it has to be this way. And if I just, you know, write, you know, so a lot of times I feel that it's not necessarily me writing, but, you know, him, higher power. So that's where inner three comes from. It's on the inside, having that holy trinity and letting everything be connected.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
So hidden meanings.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, it's been awesome to get to know you this year, and I appreciate reaching out, because, you know, a lot of people don't, and it's just neat to get to know you, and looking forward to seeing all the work that you're going to do.
Appreciate it. And yeah. I promise I actually am not a big talker. It doesn't seem like it, and that's why I compose, so that way I don't have to say as much. But I appreciate you having me on, and listeners, and please keep supporting this website and podcast, because absolutely incredible. And if you ever need to reach out to me, please contact me. I'd love to help out any way I can.
Awesome. Well, thanks again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So this is our episode number 53. We're going to be on here in about 45 minutes at 1 o'clock with Dr. Kathy Hudnall. So we will see you all in just a little bit. Thanks again.
Thank you for tuning in. For resources and more information, visit orchestrateacher.net.